Hi, everyone, and welcome to the AI Innovators Podcast. I'm Rob May. I'm the CEO at Nova. We make a product called BrandGuard that is an AI product, and I am also an active angel investor. So if you have any really cool early stage AI deals, please send them my way. We do this podcast to look at innovators in the space, entrepreneurs, executives, sometimes academics who are doing cool stuff in AI. And my guest today definitely is doing some really, really interesting stuff. Please welcome to the podcast, Jeff Orkin from Central Casting. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
I want to jump into this, and you have a really, really interesting business that's not like a lot of what other people have done. You're not making sort of like traditional enterprise software or anything like that. You build characters for video games. Give us at a high level, like when people come to Central Casting, what do they buy and what are they getting?
Right. Yeah. So Central Casting provides pre-trained characters for game developers that can be dropped into any platform, any game engine or user-generated content platform. And the idea is that the characters come fully formed, which means you get a 3D model, animations, recorded voices, but also the behavior and the dialogue. So they come with intelligence. Depending on the developer, because these days there's a wide range of developers from individual creators on Roblox to giant game studios, they will either use our characters just as is straight off the shelf, or we have a character creator that lets you customize how they look and customize their personality traits. And then at the studio level, they could choose to reskin characters with their own internal art team.
Really interesting. And so there's a lot of pieces to video games, and you chose to focus on characters. You could have focused on maybe like backgrounds or scenery or weapons or all these other pieces, tokens, coins, whatever. So what drove the decision to focus on characters? Did it have something to do with the technology? Did it have something to do with the market? Or how did you sort of come to that?
Yeah, it's really both the technology and the market. So on the market side, what's happening in games is that games are evolving into live services where a game ships and then the studio continues to create content to encourage people to subscribe or spend money on in-app purchases or buy mods. And so this puts incredible pressure on studios to kind of endlessly create content. And I know from my own background, having worked in the video game industry for a decade before going into AI research and startups, that even the biggest studios have always kind of struggled with characters. It's a challenge to create high quality characters that adapt well to every situation they're going to find themselves in rich game worlds where their behavior and dialogue should change depending on what other characters are present, where they are in the world, what props are around. And we're at a really interesting time now where you can solve these problems in part leveraging some of these generative AI models that can generate many narratives that explain or help imagine all the different ways a scenario might play out. And the approach we're taking is to use these generative models at authoring time to assist designers. And then we output a more traditional structured model of behavior called a planning domain that works in something called a hierarchical task network planner. And that's a representation that ships in games today and has been shipping in games for about 15 years and no longer needs like GPUs and doesn't have the unpredictability of generative AI models, but is highly adaptive if you put enough content into it.
So that's interesting. So where, walk us through all the different aspects of AI that sort of come into character design and usage in games and the underlying problems that you're trying to solve to make this happen. Because you mentioned something really interesting here, which is, you know, they don't have the uncertainty that like an LLM might provide in a video game. And so, you know, is that a problem? Is that going to be solved? Is that something that you're working on? Or like, you know, how do you bring all this together from an AI perspective?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, characters are interesting because, you know, there's the visual aspect and there are a ton of people now productizing generative AI to create textures and models and as well as audio. There's a lot of generative AI happening there. But where I don't see a real solution that, you know, we're trying to fill a gap is creating the model of the behavior and dialogue that can cover all of these different situations. If you drop a character in a sandbox environment or a random creator's game on a UGC platform, where UGC is user generated content like Roblox or Minecraft. And so we do use LLMs, but we use them at authoring time so that you get the advantage of the wide variety of output they can produce, but a designer has the opportunity to look at those results and decide what makes it into their final game so that what ships doesn't have that unpredictability that causes a game designer big problems of, you know, how do I build a game that's going to react to something where I don't know what a character is going to say at runtime? There are a variety of companies that have kind of rushed to market with what's kind of the more obvious approach of just taking like chat or taking GPT and putting it inside a character to allow it to converse dynamically at runtime. But I'm not a big believer in that being a really practical approach for a number of reasons. For one, it's expensive. Every time a user talks to a character, it needs to go out and hit like OpenAI's server, which is expensive. But also, it's unpredictable. It may not be safe. You can trick GPT into having all kinds of conversations that you might not want to see in a game, especially a game that might be for younger audiences. We're aiming for a solution that's more explainable, more transparent than the black box of the LLM in and of itself. But certainly LLMs are an incredible advance that, if I could kind of go on a related tangent, my PhD research was authoring characters that could play a role like a waitress in a restaurant, where the behavior and dialogue was learned from thousands of game players. So we would record thousands of humans playing roles and then train AI models from that. The nice thing with LLMs is you can skip that step, which is, you know, it's a lot of work. You have to build a game before you build the game to capture the data, whereas LLMs already have more data than we would have ever collected. So it's kind of like you're simulating game players to produce all the variations of what someone might say in different situations. So incredibly valuable, but I just think they're valuable at authoring time. And then the other problem we're trying to solve is common sense reasoning. A scenario that seems so simple on the surface, like what happens in a restaurant, when you actually try to get characters to interact, you find yourself surprised by how much common sense we take for granted. Like, you put a character in a restaurant and set up some behaviors where he can sit there and eat his meal after it's served to him. But you might be surprised when that character finishes his meal and starts eating a meal at the nearby table, because out of the box, they don't necessarily have common sense that you eat the food that was served to you at your table. Things like that, or the fact that when you come in, a waitress serves you water, and that's understood that that's for free. But then any other drink is a drink that you explicitly ordered. And when you come into a restaurant, you sit at one of the clean tables. You don't just sit at a table that's a mess from the last customer. So we're looking at ways to use knowledge graphs to encode the rules of common sense in a way that characters can leverage. And we can learn that from transcripts, from movie scripts, from GPT-generated narratives, by seeing examples of the affordances of objects from how people interact with them.
Interesting. So I want to talk about one of the interesting things about having you on is you're one of the few people who's probably worked on multiple AI startups at this point in a relatively young field. So you've been doing this a long time academically. So you've done a couple of different AI projects now and companies. I'm curious, what are some of the lessons you've learned about building AI products in ways that maybe they're different from traditional things?
Yeah, AI products are interesting because it doesn't take that long to get some first version of something running. And then you're like, okay, I'm just going to throw more data into it and it's going to get better and better. And that can lead to a great demo, But there's a big difference between a demo and a product. I think this is kind of what's happened with like a lot of these image models, like the diffusion models. They're amazing demos. You can type a few words and, you know, say, I want an otter wearing a sweater, holding a frying pan, and lo and behold, it produces that. But then if somebody is actually going to use this, there's some reason other than just to play around. Eventually, there's some actual reason somebody is trying to produce an image. And that's where the rubber hits the road and you start to realize like, it's not as easy to control the output as you'd hoped. And, you know, they might be trying to create an image for some educational purposes or to market a product. And it can be difficult to coerce the model into getting you the results that you want. And this happens in different ways with all AI products that you can get it doing something, but then at some point you really have to get more deliberate and targeted and think about who's the user and what's the use case, and validate for yourself that your product can do that specifically. And that will usually lead to refining your thinking on what data it should be trained on, maybe even what model you should use, what guardrails you should put around the input or the output. But yeah, it's always a challenge with AI products to know when it's good enough, because you can never fully test every input it's ever going to see. And then I think the other part of it is instrumenting these products so that you can continue to monitor them once they go out in the wild.
Now, the market you're going after, video games and game creators in particular, is kind of unique. It's not something, you know, I've done a lot of investing. I've been a VC, professional VC for a while, and it's not a market that a lot of people go after. So for people that aren't familiar with it, how do you reach your customer base and how receptive are they to this AI message? Is it something they're looking for? Do you feel like you're sort of taking their creativity away, or what's that been like?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's an interesting market, because the game industry, it's as much a culture as it is a business. You'll find that many people in the game industry could have a higher paying job somewhere else, but they're in the game industry because they love it. They are trying to make a living and trying to sell a product, but the product's also kind of a passion project in some sense. You know, people are doing things because they think they're cool. The people in the industry are often not super receptive to being sold to. Like, you can't come to them and just say, I have a product that's going to get your game out the door faster. That's good. You know, that could be helpful, but it also has to have the promise that it's going to enhance what they do and make a better product. And I think you really have to meet game developers kind of where they are, like, rather than just trying to like cold call a lot of people, you have to get involved in the community and understand what they're trying to build and collaborate with them in the beginning to show that what you're building can help them with what they're building or inspire them to build new things. So we're really taking kind of a grassroots approach. We're open sourcing our stuff. We're making it available to creators. We're starting to collaborate on a small scale with individual creators, but we're also talking to AAA studios, trying to understand what they would need to see to be ready to try this in one of their games.
As you're talking to these guys, dig a little bit into how the gaming community is thinking about the future of AI and how you see AI shaping gaming, because you're in a really unique position, I think, given your sort of history of AI research and starting AI startup and working in the gaming industry, to sort of talk to us about maybe where you think that's all going and what are we going to be able to do in 3, 4, 5 years that maybe seems not feasible today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a super interesting time right now, because everyone in the industry, just like outside of the game industry too, but especially in the game industry, there's a lot of curiosity. Like, there's been so much hype around AI in the past, like, 6 months especially, that there's a lot of curiosity on about what is real, like what can you really do. And there's also a lot of skepticism, because many years people have been trying to sell AI to the game industry that has not delivered in many cases. And there also is some tension with the creative side of, is this going to take away jobs of writers or artists? And I think it's going to take some time for this all to shake out. But ultimately, I think people will understand that AI is a tool that assists and helps them. It's another tool in the toolbox that is very powerful and will let them do what they want to do in new ways and open new opportunities. But I think there's kind of like human nature to see a new technology and to like immediately jump to the most extreme conclusion of like, oh my God, games are going to be completely different. Nobody's going to build games themselves. Games are going to design themselves and be totally personalized experiences. And I don't believe that's what's going to happen. I think there are some people will try these things and have some interesting experiments, but these ideas of like completely generative, personalized games open up a million unsolved design questions. Like, okay, you can generate a personalized game, but is it fun? Like, there's kind of a human element. There's an art to like making a high quality game.
Right.
And I think, you know, the AI is democratizing who can make games, which is great. And this is just another step in what's been happening over decades. Like when I got into the game industry originally, like I started my career as a game developer in the 90s. And at that time, there were like under 100 game studios. Like there was a print magazine called Next Generation that once a year would print the mailing addresses of every game studio within a few pages so that you could apply for jobs there. There were very few places you could go and professionally make games. And then maybe a decade later, there's like the Unity game engine. And now you have a lot of the work done for you and you can focus on the creative side. And now you've thousands of indie developers, which was really cool. It was like this kind of revolution. And then now we've got user generated content platforms like Roblox, and Fortnite is evolving into a UGC platform. Now you have millions of people who could be making games because so much is taken care of for them. The game's already up and running. You're just creating the content on top of it. And AI is just another step in, I think it's going to raise the bar everywhere that like anyone's game can look great with generative AI helping create some of the art content. But it's not going to replace like the human element of what makes a good game. Just, you know, the same way that filmmaking at one point, there were like big expensive cameras and it took a lot to make a film. And now you could make like a professional quality film on an iPhone, but just because everybody can do it doesn't mean that everybody does it well. I think it's just going to take a lot of time for this all to play out. Like for me personally, there are only so many hours in the day. I don't want to play like games that people just cranked out quickly. I want games that people put a lot of thought into and made a high quality experience. And so for us at Central Casting, we're focusing on the character aspect of this game. Like, can we democratize and raise the bar for the quality level of characters in everyone's game? Can we make it table stakes that everybody has high quality interactive experiences with characters? Because if it's as easy as coming to Central Casting and just choosing from a huge library of different archetypes and customizations of them, that could be a pun intended game changer, you know?
Yeah. You know, you hit on a really interesting point that I think people miss about AI, and that is that the vast majority of products that we produce have a value chain that consists of many, many, many steps. And AI has different impacts at different levels of those steps. And some of those steps it will democratize, but that doesn't mean the whole step, right? And it doesn't mean the whole process. I mean, definitely AI is going to be revolutionary in a lot of ways, but you're right that particularly for a lot of this, you know, music and movies and games and media, like you're not suddenly having high school kids making blockbuster films just because of AI. So it's going to be interesting to see where it's applied. And, you know, basic economics says when you democratize something and it gets easier, like typically if there's any other choke point, like that point goes up in value, right? Something else gets harder and more expensive to do many times, because when you're creating so much more content, then, you know, it's not all created equal. Like we have a limited amount of attention. So now you've got to, you know, you got to find it and you got to promote it. And it's, you know, all those kinds of things.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah.
we have a lot of entrepreneurs that listen to the podcast. So I'm curious, is there a technical problem that you wish somebody else would solve that would help Central Casting move forward, but it's not something that you're working on?
Yeah. You know, it's getting to the point where, like, it's hard to come up with something that isn't being worked on somewhere. Like, any problem you can come up with for games, you could point to some at least academic project, often commercial, but it's like the pieces, there's so many opportunities to bring the pieces together into like a coherent, like truly industry grade solution. And like, I can think of a couple examples of this that like I wish existed and maybe, you know, years down the road, we'll attack ourselves. But one is behavior capture. I was kind of talking earlier about, so our platform can take different kinds of narratives as input. They could be generated from GPT. They could be recorded human gameplay. But I would love it if humans with an iPhone could just act out some scene and have it turn into a text narrative that transcribes every word they said, but also describes the physical actions they were taking, because that would be the direct input that we would need for our platform. And it's like all the pieces exist. You can do high quality motion capture with like markerless motion capture now. There's good machine learning for recognizing behaviors. There's transcribing audio, but the pieces just haven't all come together into a seamless like capture behavior and get like a movie script written down out of it. And then kind of in a similar vein, like with audio, we have interesting problems at Central Casting because we want characters that are configurable and can play different roles and eventually work in different languages, and leads to these problems with audio where now there's very high quality text to speech, but it could be more seamless to take text to speech, generate it in every language you need for every different character that might say that in different intonations, and just kind of streamline all that. There's a lot of just kind of like bookkeeping and management of it. And then another thing that I don't know if everybody realizes, when you're making video games and placing AI characters in games, there's a lot of instrumenting of the game world, like placing invisible hints that tell them where they can walk and where they can hide from someone and what they can duck behind and what object they could knock over at somebody. And the list goes on and on. And this is usually handled by a ton of human labor, like just tedious work, like placing these invisible markers around the environment. And some of this has been automated, like there's these navigational meshes that can be automatically generated on terrain and stuff. But there's more work that could be done to automatically label the semantics of an environment so that a character understands what every object is and how they can interact with each object. And it's another problem where, like, I think most of the pieces are there in some form, but they haven't been brought together in a seamless, like easy to use workflow.
Gotcha. Well, last question, the question I like to end on, because, you know, you're obviously a pretty senior guy in your career at this point, and for all the other entrepreneurs out there, I'm always interested in hearing from our guests. What is one piece of life advice that you learned along the way, maybe a mentor gave you, or you read in a book you really like, but like the one thing that you want to pass on to other people that are listening?
Yeah, I mean, within the context of like startups, there are a lot of things that like, they sound so cliche, but like I found them just to be like very useful and true. And like one of these things is like, I don't know who this is attributed to originally, but the saying luck is where preparedness meets opportunity. Like I think so much of doing a startup, there's this big element of luck, like you met the right person at the right time, either in terms of who you can hire or who can fund you or who you can sell to. But I like to think that you can create your own luck by being proactive about talking about what you're doing and getting it in front of the right people so people are aware of it, and increase the opportunity for serendipity.
Yeah, I think that's Definitely great advice. We're at 30 minutes, so we should probably wrap up. But Jeff Orkin from Central Casting, thanks for being on today.
Thanks so much. This was fun.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, if you have guests that you think should be on the program, feel free to email us, rob@ai-innovators.com. We hope you'll check out the rest of our episodes.